Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Samaches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The opening section of the Mishnah on Samaches, which is actually the lower half of this rather short Omid, is presented in parentheses. In this case, we'll read this section. It's noted on the inside margin that in some versions of Mishnayos, this appears at the end. Kol hapsulim shemolku malikosan psula, all those that are unfit to do malika, who did the malika is unacceptable. The malika is the process of slaughtering associated with sacrificial birds. The eino mitame beves hablia. However, the birds are not considered as if they merely died, which would have created a ritual impurity incurred at the point of swallowing the meat while eating it. That's called tumas beis hablia. But even though there was a lacking in the malika, it seems to be that it was sufficiently good, sufficiently worthy, so as to remove the problem of tumas beis hablia, and hence it's not viewed as it merely having died, which would have imparted a nevela status, but rather it's considered legally slaughtered. The Mishnah, we have a topic heading that is associated with this. In the outside margin, you see the nosei, the topic heading, malika or shechita. Pa'omim einom metamen b'beis hablio, pa'omim metamen. Sometimes the malika or shechita. Malika, as we mentioned, is the special method of slaughter associated with sacrificial birds. That's a situation or a process whereby the kohen inserts his thumbnail into the back of the neck of the bird, and thereby causing its neck to be severed. That's the proper way to deal with a sacrificial bird offering. And in fact, using a knife to accomplish that would be incorrect. As opposed to standard slaughtering of birds, which is done from under the neck, as opposed to the back of the neck, and with a knife, as opposed to a fingernail. And that's called shechita. But these two procedures, malika and shechita, sometimes they are able to remove the problem of tumas beis hablia, and sometimes they are so ineffective that they do not remove the problem of tumas beis hablia. Tumas beis hablia, as we mentioned before, is associated with a dead kosher variety bird, which is known as a nevelas of tohor. So let us see the different examples. We've used a numbering system to break things down for your convenience in the Mishnah. Molach, you see the Roman numeral number 1 features malika and the different variations on that. And then we'll see a Roman numeral 2 toward the end of the Mishnah, which features molach besakin. The two categories will result in different conclusions, and that's the reason for these two different numbers. The Roman number 1, what's the conclusion? We have a double underline, Einon Metameis Beis Hablia, and after the Roman numeral number 2, you'll see on Omid Beis, the third line from the top, a double underlined expression, Metame Beis Hablia. Hence, we have these two categories featured by these two different Roman numerals. So, Roman numeral number 1, Molach, Bismol Obalilo. He did malika with his left thumb, which is incorrect, or he did it at night, which is the wrong time to do it. Shochat, As opposed to molach, you have a case of shochat, the bird. He slaughtered the bird. Slaughtering, as we mentioned before, is with the use of a knife. Chulin b'fnim, an unsanctified bird, a mundane bird in the Beis HaMikdash. V'kotshim b'chutz, or he slaughtered a sanctified bird, a bird offering, but outside the Beis HaMikdash. All of these cases, einon metamois b'beis HaBliyah, even though they're all wrong, they're all incorrect, they're procedures that should not have been done, nevertheless, they have been sufficiently effective to remove the problem of Tumas Beis HaBliyah, or in simpler terms, they're considered legitimate or kosher forms of slaughtering. Section 2, Molach Besakin, or Molach Chulin Bifnim V'Kotshim B'Chutz. He used a sakin to do malika, which would mean that he took a knife and pressed it into the back of the neck of the bird offering. Or he did malika with his hand, but he did it to a common bird, an unsanctified bird, in the Beis HaMikdash. Or he did malika to a sanctified bird, a sacrifice bird, outside the Beis HaMikdash. Or Torin Shelo Yiyazmanon, the Torin kind of bird, the Torin variety of bird, it's a type of bird, it's not acceptable as a korban until it reaches a certain stage of physical development. So this is describing a case of malika done to Torin before they reached their required maturity. Or another case, Ubnei Yonah Shovar Zmanon. Bnei Yonah are birds that only when they're young are they acceptable. It's an opposite situation from the Torin in the sense that Torin are not acceptable until they reach a certain stage of maturity. In the case of Bnei Yonah, they become unfit when they mature. As they get older, they approach a stage of unacceptability. So this case, Dalit, is describing Malika done to Bnei Yoina She'ovar Zmanon, whose time passed. Or She'yovsha Gapo, V'shenismes Eino, V'shenikto Raglo. These are all types of blemishes where where its back gets dried out, or its Nismes Eino, it's missing an eye, or its leg is cut off. Even though we have a rule that Ein Tamus V'Zachris Ba'oifos, that issues of blemish and gender are of no consequence with regard to Ophos, this statement of Ein Tamus, that there's no requirement of being unblemished, that's only insofar as a very specific case, which is known as Dukin Shibayin, a type of scratch on the eye, which in the case of animals, that would render the sacrifice invalid. In the case of birds, a scratch on the eye does not affect its status. However, an actual missing limb, even in the case of birds, does render it invalid. So if you had a sacrifice with a missing limb, as was described, and you did malika to it, the result is metama bebeis HaBliyah. It would be so ineffective that which was done was tantamount to a mere murder or killing of the bird, resulting in it being a nevela. A nevela is a dead animal, and in the case of a dead kosher variety bird, a non-slaughtered bird, it communicates tuma upon it being swallowed. That's called tumas beis HaBliyah. Ze haklal. Now the Mishnah offers a rule. Kol shepsulo b'kodesh. Any bird that came into the Beis HaMikdash in a state of acceptability, and just after it was in the Beis HaMikdash, something wrong happened. Well, eino mitama beis HaBliyah. That if it's processed, and as we said, the problem developed only after it was brought into the Beis HaMikdash, that kind of situation does not result in tumas beis HaBliyah. In other words, the malika done in that kind of situation or that fashion is sufficiently kosher as a malika to remove the tumas beis HaBliyah problem. However, lo hoya psulo b'kodesh, if its deficiency was prior to its entering the Beis HaMikdash, then metame b'beis HaBliyah. A simple example of that would be that one brought in a bird with a missing limb into the Beis HaMikdash, and then even if he sanctified it, but he then did malika to such a thing, that would be of no value, and hence it would be just considered like a dead bird, and hence communicating tuma b'beis hablia. As we turn to the Gemara, we notice immediately a geometric form, which draws our attention to the need for an explanation of the form. The crown form, as we term it, is you see surrounding Rav, and if you skim down this densely marked daf, you'll try to find another crown form. And if you do, you'll notice it around Rabbi Yochanan on the lower half of the Omid. On the side, we have our nosei, topic heading, mivneh, structural note. In this case, we've combined the two together. The crown form features a machlokis Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, beinyan malikas zar. A zar is a non-kohen. What is the din if a non-kohen does the malika? L'rav, mitama besabli. According to Rav, that's considered a seriously lacking malika, and therefore it's totally ineffective. And if a zar does the malika, the bird will be viewed as an avela and hence communicate tuma through eating it. Rabbi Yochanan eino mitama. According to Rabbi Yochanan, malika zar is effective enough to remove the tumas beis hablia. Let us start the Gemara. Omar Rav. We've broken down Rav into several categories. You can see there's a little aleph, and followed by a 1 and 2, and then there's a category beis on the next line, followed by a 1 and 2 as well. So, category Aleph, Rav says, Smoil v'layla, malika. We've written in the word molak there. It's molak. He did malika through with the left hand, left thumb, or at night. Ein mitamin b'beis hablia. We just have a little note of, accompanied by this asterisk. You can see on the inside margin, Yesh litzayin is noteworthy. The smoil laila v'sakin, three of the four things that Rav is going to mention, muskarim b'mishnah, are mentioned in the Mishnah. V'rav bo lehoisif zar. Rav comes to add the issue of the non-kohen, which was not something mentioned in the Mishnah. U'b'inyan zeh Rabbi Yochanan choleik l'kamon. And regarding this point, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees, as we'll see later. If you have a sense of anxiety and you want to know immediately, where do you see that? So if you glance down, this is something you can do with the power of the markings. You glance down and you see Rabbi Yochanan with the crown around him. He says, Zar ein mitama, as opposed to what we're going to see shortly with Rav. And of course, we squiggle underline the word zar so that you can see the contrast between the two shitas rapidly. So we look. Let's continue though with Rav. Zar v'sakin, malika done by a non-kohen or through a knife, that creates tumas metamin beis hablia. That is a totally ineffective malika, and hence the bird is considered a nevela, and thereby communicating tuma upon its being eaten. The Gemara asks, "My shna smoil the islehech sherabi amakipurim." Based on what are we saying that the smoil is somewhat effective in the sense that there's no more tumas beis hablia because it's viewed as a somewhat effective malika? Because smoil, the issue of using the left hand has precedence of being acceptable. That's what it means here, hechsher biyom hakipurim. Because on Yom Kippur, we find the left hand being used as part of the service of the Yom Kippur requirements. That's a case of the receptacle containing the incense brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's carried in the left hand of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol takes the pan containing the coals in his right hand and the receptacle, that's called a kaf, in his left hand, and goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim like that. So you see that the left hand is something that has precedent for being acceptable. And that's on Yom Kippur. So being that there's some precedence for smoil, for left hand being acceptable, therefore Malika b'smoil is considered sufficiently valid or effective to remove Tumas Beis Ablia. The Laila, Islay Hechshera Beivar Mufdorim. The idea of nighttime also has precedence of acceptability, and that's with regard to the offering up of the limbs and innards of those korbanos sacrificed during the day that you did not have enough time to complete the offering in the fire on the top of the mizbech of these items, so that's done at night. Hence, the nighttime also has a precedent for being acceptable. Therefore, malika at night will be, even though it's not the best thing to do, and a person's not will not fulfill his obligations that way, but nevertheless, it's effective enough to remove the tumas beis hablia. Zor nami islei hechshero b'shchita. So the question is, why does Rav render the zar malika as totally ineffective when we know that the zar nami islei hechshero b'shchita, that a zar, a non kohen, is acceptable with regard to shchita, the rule being that in the standard phrase is shchita kosher bazar. That means that even though most of the sacrificial procedures require a kohen, the initial act, namely shchita, does not require a kohen. Then there are psukim to bear this out, where we say that from Kabbalah Sadam onwards is a kohen required. But for the initial slaughtering, even a non-kohen can do that. So we see the precedence of a zar in the context of the Beis HaMikdash activity as being fine. So why not base yourself on Shechita Ksher Bazar to say that Malika Bazar would be effective in removing the Tumas Beis HaBliya? The Gemara answers, Shechita Lav Avodahi. Shechita, slaughtering, is not classified as a sacrificial act. It's a necessary stage, but it's not an avoda. An avoda is a term that's associated with sacrificial acts to which we would ordinarily associate a kohen. Shechita being a non-avoda, as opposed to malika, therefore shechita is outside the realm of avodos, and therefore doesn't serve as a precedent. We just encountered two new markings. We have a diamond around shechita, and then we have a triangle. The use of these different forms is explained on the outside margin under our mivneh structural note. The diamond, when you see a diamond as you skim ahead on this sugya, the diamond will appear as nisyonos, attempts, l'chloil zar bedvorim shiesh lohem hechsher b'mokom acher, to include the zar. These are attempts to include the zar as an example of things that have a precedent of being kosher in other places, kamo smoil v'laila, like we showed with regard to smoil and laila. We showed already that smoil had has a Yom Kippur precedent of being acceptable. We showed that laila has a sacrifice precedent whereby the innards and limbs are offered up at night. And therefore, if we would be successful in showing that Zar has a precedent as being acceptable in some other place, the result will be that there should be no Tumas Beis Ablia. And of course, that would present a problem for Rav. We have to explain the presence of the triangle, and that's accomplished in the next note, no say Mivneh. Ma'akav, the triangle will represent an attempt to keep track, a play-by-play, if you will, of the Gemara. With the triangle point facing up, Chuvos answers, Lomo ein lilmoid kashrus hazar mishchita. This will be explanations of why we cannot learn the acceptability of a zar from the fact that he does shechita. So the triangle facing pointing up will be responses, and the triangle facing down will be the raising of questions. So we continue now in the Gemara. The question that had just been raised was, why not say that Shechita Ksher Bazar should serve as a precedent for the acceptability of a Zar, and hence Maliko Bazar should be sufficient for removing Tumas Beis Ablio? The Gemara answered, Shechita Lav Avodahi. There is now a bracketed section in which, by the way, this back and forth will continue. However, the purpose of these brackets is explained in the inside margin. There's a little note next to our asterisk indicating matras asugrayim, the purpose of these brackets, l'shem dilug, is for the purpose of skipping, kedei lirois es malacha klali shel asugya, in order to afford you with the ability of seeing, of getting an overview of the flow of the Gemara. The achrei shedoichim hanisayon l'tar melika zar al smach shita, after we have been successful, and that's what we were just successful in pushing off the attempt to show Malika Zar as being acceptable based on Shechita, HaGemara Menase Litaroi Mi HaTakdim Shel Boma. The Gemara will try to metahir, to remove the problem of Tumas Beis Ablia through Malika Zar, as citing the case of Boma. In the case of Boma, this is, Boma are private altars at a time in Jewish history when private altars were allowed. During those eras, Kohanim were not an obligation as far as sacrificial procedure was concerned. There is no kahuna by a Boma. And in that case, you found that a Zar could have done the Malika. So there would be a precedence for the kashrus of a Zar. Oid matara shel hasugrayim, another purpose in presenting these brackets, laharois shehatshuva deshchita lavavodehi, to show that this answer that the Gemara gave right now, nisheres arasof, that response remains, that's not challenged. Besoch hasugrayim ofia nisyonois lidchois tshuvazu avoloi leloi hatzlocha. Within the bracketed section, there will be an attempt to reject this response, but the attempt at rejecting will not be successful. So in the meantime, the Gemara suggested, why not learn the kashrus of Zar from the fact that a Zar is acceptable in doing Shechita of Korbonas? The Gemara answered, Shechita lav avodehi. After the brackets, you'll notice it says, V'neilaf mi boma. Why not use the boma as a precedent for the Tzar's acceptability, where we know that a Tzar is kosher to do Malika's Ophos by a Boma? So the Gemara there will say, well, mi Boma lo yolif, we don't learn from Bomos, and then there will be a bit of a discussion surrounding that. So we'll get back to that later. Now, being that we have a picture of the overall sugya, let's go over the bracketed section. The last point the Gemara made before the brackets is that Shechita lav avodahi. The Gemara asks, Volo, is that really so? That it's not an avodah v'amar bizera? Shechitas pora bizar psula. Pora is a reference to the pora aduma, the red, what's sometimes translated as the red heifer. This was an animal that was slaughtered on Har HaZeisim. And eventually the animal's body was burnt to produce ashes, and those ashes were mixed with water, which was the means of achieving tahara from tumas meis, from defilement as a result of encountering the dead humans, dead bodies. That's the case of pora, and the halacha is that the pora must be slaughtered by a kohen. And as it says here, that Shechitas Pora Bazar would be possibly psula, invalid. That would indicate to us that Shechita is a form of avoda. Umachvi Rav Allah, and Rav Machvi means he pointed out concerning this law, this requirement, Elazar v'chuka, that in the Torah, Elazar's name, Elazar being the Kohen, and chuka being an expression indicating that something is binding, so that you have in the context of the Pora Aduma, Elazar and chuka, Elazar being a representative of kahuna, and chuka meaning something binding, so that kahuna is binding for the shechita of a Pora Aduma. Would that not indicate that shechita is an avoda, is classified as a sacrificial requirement? The Gemara says, "Shiny para." The case of para is different. The kotshe bedek habayis he. It has a unique status or a different status than that which we are discussing. It has a status of kotshe bedek habayis. There's different categories of sanctified items. Our general topic, it deals with kotshe mizbeach, things that were sanctified to be offered on the altar in the Beis Hamikdash. The para, even though it's something that's dedicated, it's not dedicated for altar sacrificing, for mizbeach sacrificing. It, in fact, was sacrificed, it was slaughtered and burnt outside the Beis HaMikdash altogether. Its category is known as kotshe bedek habayis. And insofar as it being classified differently, therefore, the fact that we have a kohen requirement for it doesn't cast any light on shechitas korbanos. It may be pointed out that if you have to assign levels of importance, kotshe bedek habayis are of a lower sanctity level than kotshe mizbeach. The Gemara now asks, well, v'lo kol shekein hu, is it not now something that we can make a kal v'chomer from? Kotshe bedek habayis bokun, if something of this lower level sanctity has a kohen requirement, the shechit of the parah, is required to be done by a kohen, kotshe mizbeach mibaya, something that has the kotshe mizbeach category. Would I need to be told that you need a kohen? Certainly you would need a kohen. Omar Rav Shisha Bre de Rav Idi. Rav Shisha responds and says that we require kahuna for kotshe bedek habayis is midi dehave, can be parallel to amarois negoyim, to the case of viewing blemishes negoyim that result in what we call a tzoras status. These are blemishes that appear on a body, could be on clothing or a house, but in order to rule concerning the appearance of a blemish and the ruling resulting in a mitzora categorization, this is dependent on the ruling offered by a kohen. The Gemara says, the lav avodahi, maros negoim, viewing these blemishes, or discolorations more accurately, the viewing of these discolorations and the offering a ruling upon them is not an avoda, it's not part of a sacrificial process, and yet ubaya kuna, it does require kuna. So we see that the requirement of kuna doesn't automatically label something an avoda. So even though by the Pora Aduma the kohen was required for its slaughtering, that does not make slaughtering into an avoda any more than the requirement of a kohen for maris negoyim is not an avoda. The Gemara now asks, "V'neilaf mibama, why not learn out the acceptability of malikas zar from the fact that by a boma, the personal altars during the time of their permissibility, a zar could have done malikas ofos?" The Gemara responds and says, "Mibama lo yolif, we do not learn from bamos. Bamos do not serve as a precedent for learning other halachas." The Gemara asks, "Velo, is that so, that the bama does not serve as a precedent for hatanya?" We have the following source: "Minayin liyotze shim olo lo yirei." From where do we know that a korban, let us say of korban was slaughtered, and it's the parts of it that are supposed to go onto the mizbeach before they were brought onto the mizbeach were taken out of the azara. That's wrong. Something that's destined for the mizbeach should not leave the azara. Let's say it did. Then it was brought back into the azara and brought up onto the altar. Maybe it shouldn't have been. It should not have been brought there, but they did it. She'imala, the source says, lo yered, that if it was brought on, it stays there. In other words, there's something not so bad about this violation called yotze. So how do we know that? Share yotze kosher b'mamav. There's a precedence for yotze as being acceptable. And where was that? That was in the case of the Boma, in the history or the era of Boma acceptability. Boma being a personal altar, there were no geographic restrictions. A person, if he was offering something on a personal altar, he can carry those items wherever he wants before he actually offered it up on the Boma. So, just like you see by Boma, the concept of Yotze did not apply. We are showing that Yotze, we're showing from the case of Boma, that Yotze is not a catastrophic violation insofar as that if a Yotze in the time of the Beis HaMikdash is brought onto the Mizbeach, it can remain there and be put into the fire and offered up. So what do we see from this? We see that a Boma, and we've dashed underlined that in this source for the purpose of focusing on that Boma does serve as a precedent for Halacha. The Gemara answers, in truth, Boma does not serve as a precedent for Yotze. The question is then, how do you know that in the case of Yotze, im ola lo yered? Tana azois teras ha'ula somach le. The Tana that just said the Halacha of Yotzim Olo Lo Yered is basing himself on a pasuk. He is not learning it in actuality from Boma, but rather from this Gzeres HaKosuf. Up to this point, we have featured Shitas Rav with regard to a Zar Shemolak, and Rav holds that a Zar Shemolak is seriously deficient, and therefore, if a Zar, a non-coin, does the Malika, the bird is considered as if it's simply dead, and as opposed to being slaughtered, and therefore there is Tumas Beis Ablia. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Zar Ein Metame Beveis Ablia Sakin Metame Beveis Ablia. The case of Zar does not create, that Malika Zar does not create Tumas Beis Ablia. That is the point at which he disagrees with Rav. However, with regard to the Sakin, which was something that was mentioned in the Mishnah, that's Sakin. Malika Sakin, Malika done through a Sakin Mitama Bebeis Ablia, and that's like Rav, as it was mentioned in the Mishnah. We see a new geometric form. This draws our attention to the outside margin where you see the Mivneh, the structural note, featuring this house form. The house form are Tzitutim Mimishnosenu, L'Toivas Rabbi Yochanan, D'Mlika Zar Eino Metama. Quotes from our Mishnah that would suggest to the benefit of Rabbi Yochanan that the Malika Zar, the Zar who does Malika, removes the Tumas Beis Ablia. So, turning to the Gemara, Tanan, we have learned in our Mishnah, Kol HaPsulim Shemoku Malikoson Psula. And it also says, V'eino Mitame HaBeis Ablia. This was found as in our Mishnah, at the very beginning of the Mishnah. It was a section that appeared in parentheses, but that's what it said, that the Malika is Psula, but there's no Tumas Beis Ablia. There was something effective about those featured in this rule, Kol HaPsulim. So, Bishlam or Rabbi Yochanan, things work out well, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that Malika's Zar is not Metame, kol, masuyezar, the word kol, which represents a rule, an inclusive type expression. It's coming to include something other than that which is stated explicitly. What else is to be included? The suyezar, this would include the zar, and as we saw in the Mishnah, that the whatever is included in the, under this kol absalim, ein mitame abe sablia. That's what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rav kol asuyemai. But according to Rav, what does the kol expression, this inclusive expression, come to include? Lav la suye smoil velaylo. Is it not coming to include, as far as Rav is concerned, smoil velaylo, that malika besmoil or malika velaylo would not mitame beis ablia? Well, if that's the case, though, smoil velaylo behedya katoni. But smol and laila are stated explicitly. I don't need the kol expression to include that which is already stated explicitly. The Gemara answers, toni v'hodeh v'farish. The Mishnah teaches kol, a general expression, and then enumerates and then delineates what is included in that. And as far as Rav is concerned, all that's included in the psulim that result in no tumas beis ablia, that would be true with regard to smoil and lila, but not to include zar. Toshma. We once again quote from our Mishnah, ze haklal kol shaya psula b'kodesh eina matama begodim beveis ablia. Anything that's called psula b'kodesh, there is no tumas beis ablia. Bishlam Rabbi Yochanan kol asuyezar. Things work out well according to Rabbi Yochanan that the zar shemolak is eino metame gona beis ablia. The word kol in that's dashed underlined in this quote that would include the zar. Once, as we said before, the word kol is an inclusive expression. So the zar would be included as, and the result being here is eino metame gona beis ablia. There would be no tuma in this case, tuma of the clothing that the person eating the meat would receive. Elo la Rav lasuyemai. According to Rav, that malikas zar results in tumas beis ablia. What does this kol expression come to include as not resulting in tumas beis ablia? Uletamech, according to you who are asking on Rav, Rav could say back, Shelohoya psulo b'kodesh, things that were not psul b'kodesh, things whose kedusha, whose psul, whose invalidity was before it entered the Beis HaMikdash. And the Mishnah mentioned about these things, Shelohoya psulo b'kodesh, or metamet tumas beis ablia. The suye mai, what is being included by this part of the Mishnah? What's being included? Ela, Resha, the Resha, which spoke about things that are not metama, la'asuye, shchitas kodshim bifnim, that comes to include the shchita of birds that are sanctified, bearing in mind that shchita is something done with a knife. That's not the proper thing to do with bird offerings. But nevertheless, the resha of the Mishnah, which describes things that are not mitama tumas beis ablia, and we saw a kol expression there, that would include things that are, or let us say a little more accurately, where the Mishnah mentioned kol she hoya psula b'kodesh, are not mitama tumas beis ablia, that includes the case of shchitas kodshim bifnim, where sanctified birds are slaughtered in the Azorah. Now that's something that was not mentioned in the Mishnah. Seifa, that mentions shelohi apsul v'kodesh, are mitama v'veis amliya, lasuye malikas chulin b'chutz. That would include the case of malika done to a non-sanctified bird outside the Beis HaMikdash. That's something that case is not mentioned in the Mishnah. Therefore, we have these expressions that come to include that. So Rav is able to account for the different inclusive expressions that the Mishnah mentions. Nevertheless, Tanyo Kavosi Rabbi Yochanan, we have a Tanaic source that supports Rabbi Yochanan that a Malikas Zar is not Mitama Tumas Beis Ablia. The source begins, Molka Zar, notice we've dashed underline Zar because we want to emphasize that's what we're dealing with right now. If a Zar did Malika, Molka Puzzle, or if a Puzzle did the Malika, someone who's unqualified, Hapigol Vanois Vatome, or birds that were done with the improper mindset with regard to wrong time or place, or Noser leftover birds, or Tomei, if one ate them, Ein Mitame Abe Sablia, they do not communicate Tumas Be Sablia. So we see in this source that Malika Zar, Ein Mitame Tumas Be Sablia, that is what Rabbi Yochanan himself said. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.